Very good morning to you, my dear listener. Good morning to you, Namibia. Welcome. Welcome to your number one talk radio station. Thank you, David, for handing over the mic to this side of the world, to this side of the country. And we're coming to you now live from the Ondangwa studio. In the mighty region of Oshana. So good morning. How's your good morning so far? You could be driving all the way to work, or you could be at work already. Well, if you're on the road, make sure that you drive safely. Take care of, make sure that, you know, you and those are driving on the road with you are safe. You don't become a danger to other, you know, road users, okay? So, yeah, good morning. Where are you listening us from? So thanks for joining us at this point in time. So it's a pleasure for us. It's always a pleasure to have you in our company. So you're most welcome, and thanks for joining us at this point. And my name is Mike Oshoveli, and this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in terms of business news, economic news, and political news. Okay, every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers making headlines. So we keep it clear, and always curious, asking the question that matters and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of that conversation as well. So this is your space to unpack the headlines with me and get to the heart of those stories. So welcome. Our time is about 5 minutes past the hour of 8, and we will be here. I will be here with you until the hour of 10 o'clock, when I will be handing over to my fellow, my colleagues in Windhoek in the capital, Tate France, who will be taking over around 10 o'clock with Kutha Mosha. So make sure you remain tuned, you stay tuned for that show as well. All right. So what we do here, we normally go back into time, you know. So, yeah, let's to look. Today is the 16th of April, you know. Good morning, Africa. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're tuning in from across this beautiful, beautiful continent. So welcome to On This Day in Africa. So today is April the 16th. So let's get into our time machine and travel back to 1969. Leaders were, that's a day Africans spoke with one voice. You know, leaders from countries across East and Central Africa have gathered in Lusaka, Zambia. So they sat around the table with something big on their minds. So, well, something big on their mind. They were thinking about their brothers and sisters in Southern Africa, who were still, you know, who were still fighting for freedom under colonial rule and the brutal system of apartheid. Now, on this very day, those leaders put pen to paper and created what we now called the Lusaka Manifesto. Now, you know, think of it as Africa saying loud and clear, you know, we stand with those fighting for liberation. So, but here's what made it so special, you know, it wasn't just about supporting armed struggle. These leaders were also saying, look, let's try peace first, wherever we can. So this document now became like a foundation stone, something future generation of African diplomats would actually build on when fighting colonialism and apartheid at the negotiating tables. around the world. So, all right, that is the Lusaka Manifesto. And so now let's jump to Liberia, April 16, 2003, for over 10 years. Over 10 years, this beautiful West African country, West African nation, have been really torn apart by one of the most devastating civil war in modern African history. You know, we are talking about a conflict that shattered family, destroyed communities, and left a deep scars. But April 16th, 2003, that date marked something important. The beginning of the end, if you want to put it that way. So the war was entering its final phase after more than a decade of darkness. Now, Liberians could finally now start seeing hope on the horizon. And it was turning down. It was a turning point that would eventually lead to peace. And now, to bring us to today, on this day, on this date, April the 16th, just last year, in 2024, something powerful was happening at the United Nations. Now, the Permanent Forum on People of African Descent, you know, kicked off a major session. And guess what they were talking about? Justice, reparation, systemic racism. So the real issue that affected African people, whether they are in Lagos, London, Windhoek, New York, or Rio de Janeiro, it doesn't matter where they are. This shows us something very important. The conversation that started back, you know, as I talk in the Lusaka Manifesto in 1969 in Lusaka. So that fight for dignity and equality, you know, it didn't stop. It grew, you know, it has grown, it gone global. So today, Africa and its worldwide family, the diaspora, are still shaping how the whole world talks about fairness, human rights, and development. So there you have it. Remember, every day is a page in our history being written. So this has been On This Day in Africa. Thanks for listening. All right. So Thursday, April the 16th, what is our thought for the day? So what is our thought for the day? All right. Here is today's thought for the day. In the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. In the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. The saying suggests that every hard moment carries something hidden inside it. You know, when life gets difficult, it can feel like the end of the road. But sometimes that very struggle opens the doors, you know, open the door to grow, open the door to be strong, and open the door to new beginnings. So difficult can teach us, can shape us, and can push us towards opportunity. Sometimes we would never have seen in an easy times. So today, do not only look at the problem. Look for lessons. No, the opening and the chance to rise. So, in the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. So that's your thought for the day. All right. So, we're going to look at the outlook of what we have on the show this morning. After this, stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Well, that's right, that's right. And 13 minutes past the hour of 8, it's our time. And well, as we say, stay connected with Eagle FM. And you can do that anytime, anywhere, anytime. Wherever you are, you can listen to Eagle FM. And one is through the Eagle FM website. Doesn't matter where you are. If you're in the office or anywhere, you have a, you know, you're connected to internet, you can go to our Eagle FM website and you can listen live there. So, but you can also listen to Eagle FM mobile app, you know, which you can download through Google Play and Play Store. So, and on the app, the reasons why I would ask you to download the app, there are a lot of features. One of the podcasts, the other is a podcast. I would love you to listen live so that you can participate in the program. But, you know, in case you didn't, you can always go to the podcast and listen to your favorite show, like Unpacking, you know. So news, you know, you get all the news, you get schedule of different shows. You know, sometimes there are also vacancies, young people, you know, make sure that you download that. So there are various, numerous business report, economic report from different local and international institutions. So if you're that kind of person who is interested, you know, in economic and business, make sure that you download that, you know, that Eagle FM mobile app now. Okay? Right now. Okay, so we're going to come back. Stay tuned.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
Yep, yep, yep. The UNAM will open the door for you. Yeah, it does. It would open the doors. Okay? All right, welcome. Welcome back. So thanks for joining us. You're welcome. Our time is 8:15, and we will be here for you. We'll be here for you until the hour of 10 o'clock. So make sure that you stay tuned, because what are we going to discuss this morning? So, okay, let me give you at 9:30, let me also give you something that you can look forward to. At 9:30, we will have an interview with the MTC Marketing and Branding Indaba Lifetime Achievement Awardee, you know, the very person who actually won that award, Hilda Basson Namjebo, and we will have an interview we will talk to her around 9:30. Make sure that you actually stay tuned for that. Because this award symbolizes a career really spent transforming the communication industry and setting a new benchmark for marketing excellence within the country. So we'll be speaking to her. Make sure that you stay tuned. You don't miss that. So and then our first item would be look, yesterday's edition of the Villager, there was an article about Namibia and Angola officially, you know, endorsing the 941 million Angola Namibia called ANA Power Interconnector Project. So they, both Angola and Namibia, they see this as a strategic infrastructure deal designed to facilitate the trade of surplus energy and also bolster a regional energy security. So That is the story that we're going to go into. It. It's a very interesting project. But what we're going to look at, well, would this be the solution to our energy problem? Would this now be a solution to our energy problem? So make sure that you unpack that with me. And, this is also for, would this be a good news for you, you know, the consumer, the energy consumer? So that's what we're going to look at as well. So do join me in just a second after this.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right. Good morning, Namibia. Good morning. You are tuning to Unpacking the Day. I'm your host. I'm Michael Chiavelli. They call me Big Mike. Good morning and welcome. So, as I said in yesterday's edition of The Villager, there is an article by Nino Menmavali, Hangala, about Namibia and Angola signed a joint development agreement to build what they are calling the ANA Power Interconnector. ANA actually stands for the first two letters of Angola, the AN, Angola, and then the NA of Namibia. So ANA, that's what it stands for. So the project is called ANA Power Interconnector Project. Okay? Now, the price tag for this project is $941 million, and the plan is actually to run a 166 kilometer higher voltage power line, you know, from Angola across our northern border at Kunene, deeper into Namibia. So, and the target for when this will be completed would be 2029. All right. But that's not all, because that's also looking at a very bigger picture. It's also looking at a very bigger picture. The deal is about regional energy as well, regional energy security. So, we're talking about diversity all the time. This is also where Namibia are now looking at not putting all its eggs in one basket. You know, we're already getting electricity from South Africa, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and whatever. So, yeah, Namibia, the deal also look at Namibia diversifying, not putting all our eggs, especially our golden eggs. No, that's not all the eggs. So, putting all our eggs in one basket. Okay? So, we're putting in different ones. So, on the side of Angola, this is a very good deal for Angola. Is a good deal, because finally, Angola is finding a market for a lot of of surplus electricity, a lot of surplus electricity that it has sitting on for years. You know, Angola have sitting on. Sitting on surplus electricity for years. So this would be a very good deal for Angola, finding a market at last, you know, a market in a form of Namibia. So now what we're going to do, we're going to pull this story apart. Okay. We're going to pull this story apart. We are going to ask questions that nobody's asking. You know, that's what this program is all about, asking the question that nobody probably is asking, and we are going to figure out what this deal really mean for you. You know, you, the consumer, okay? You, the consumer, the Namibian consumer who paid the electricity bill at the end of every month. So that's what we're going to look at. Okay, stay with me. You know, unpack this with me to be very, very, very interesting. You know, when I read the story yesterday, yesterday we had other things that were, were lined up, and I felt this is something that we need to talk about on Unpacking the Day. Yeah. So why? I mean, you don't need, if we start, why Namibia need this? Okay? Why Namibia needs, look in terms of, okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of a background. Not a background, but where we are, the backstory. Where are we? Okay? So where are we? So that you understand the context in which, you know, why Namibia probably pursued this project, you know, see this project as very important to our energy security. So we're going to approach this more holistically from various perspective or various angles. So you know that Namibia we don't generate enough of our own electricity. Full stop. We don't. All right? We don't. So we have not generated enough for years. So our installed capacity, it's somewhere around 700 megawatts or so. Now, our peak demand around 630 megawatt. Now, when on paper, that looks like we have just enough, isn't it? So, but if you stretch the surface, and you will see how fragile that balance really is. Now, when you look at our main domestic power, you know, our main domestic power is Rakana, the hydro plant on the Kunene River in the north, here, right in the north. So when the river is flowing well, you know, Rakana can pump out, you know, about 347 megawatt. But Rakana depend on rainfall. You know, when the rain fail, which they have done more often than, you know, in recent years, that plant then struggles. It struggles when the rain fails. So then we have, you know that, how do you call that? What is the Funhack, the Ochomithe, when you come in winter, that smoke comes out, where maybe that's where the name comes, Ochomithe. You know, the coal-fired station outside Windhoek. It used to produce about 120 megawatt. These days, it's barely managed. Actually, it's barely managed 30 because it is old, you know. And also, you know, when things get old and this way, the old way of doing things, it becomes expensive to run. So it becomes expensive to run. And it's being phased out. So Anixas, the heavy fuel oil plant near Wavish Bay, add another 22 megawatts. So you put all together, and our own generation, it's really thin. It's a thin cushion, okay? So if you fall, you know, you're not falling on something thick, eh? Not a thick mattress like the one the guy actually fallen from the Rundu, you know? It's a thin cushion. All right. So where does the rest come from then? Where does the rest come from? This is something that we are familiar with. Import. Everything import. Eh? That's our favorite word. We come here and all we talk about, import. All right? So food import, energy import, you know, everything import. All right, that's true. All right, we can't avoid that. So the rest come from, you know, the Namibian import more than half. We import more than half of our electricity. More than half of our electricity. So 50% come from South Africa through Eskom. You know, the rest is a mix from Zambia, Zimbabwe, the Southern African power pool, which is essentially like a wholesale electricity market for the region. So we're gonna talk about that later on also. So now here's the problem. Here's the problem. South Africa has been, South Africa has been going through its own electricity crisis for for over a decade now. You know, Eskom, the South African utility, has been limping. It has been limping from one crisis to the next. You know, load shedding became a way of life. It used to become a way of life for South Africans. You know, and there were real fears. Sometimes there were real fears for Namibia. There were real fears that Eskom would cut export, you know, to Namibia. And that would have been a nightmare for us. Now, imagine we got our 50%, you know, that 50% from South Africa. And imagine if they decided, okay, guys, we have our own issues. We cannot be able to supply anymore. So this is what you need to think. All right? And that's actually what probably the government is thinking. Is this NAGA government or NAMPOWER? All right. So that we need to diversify. If that suddenly happened, you know, then we are screwed. Eh? So that would have been a nightmare for us. Okay? And then there is the other issue is then a price. So there is also a price. So the power, if you don't know, the power we buy from Zambia and through the Southern Africa power pool is priced in US dollar. Okay, those is actually priced in US dollar. So our electricity bill is partly determined by the exchange rate between Namibia dollar and the US dollar. So that when that green bang strengthens, you know, as it has been doing actually for quite large part of the time, our power cost goes up. Okay? Then our power cost goes up. It depends on the exchange rate between, you know, our dollars. So, and those costs get passed to you. Those costs get passed to you. We'll continue analyzing this. Stay tuned.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, make sure that you do that. You subscribe for Imba. Download it, okay? I think you're going to thank me one day. It's a very useful, you know, product there. All right, so as I said, you know, the exchange rate between Namibia and between Namibian dollar and US dollar, because we buy our electricity and the power we buy from Zambia and through the Southern Africa power pool is actually priced in US dollar. And those costs actually get passed to you. It get passed to you, to the household, you know, to the household in Katatura, you know, to the shopkeepers, you know, in Chicago, to the farmer in Hobabes. So that's why Namibia currently we have some of the highest electricity price in the SADC region. You know, we do. So the bottom line is that Namibia, I mean, looking at that, we are vulnerable. All right? So we are vulnerable. Namibia is vulnerable. We are vulnerable to drought, you know, at Rakana. We are vulnerable to Eskom's problem. If Eskom got a problem, so we are vulnerable to that. So we are vulnerable to currency fluctuation, you know. So we need, that's where now we come, that we need to diversify where we get our power from. Okay, we need to diversify. So, and that, my friend, is exactly the argument the ANA project is built on. Okay, so the ANA project is actually built on that, you know, we are vulnerable. So we need to diversify. Got the picture now? All right. So let's get into the project now. Now, let's Let me tell you something that might surprise you, which actually, just it surprised me when I read the article. It actually surprised me, and this probably would surprise you, or maybe you know. Do you know our northern neighbor? You know our northern neighbor, Angola, has the opposite problem. You know, do you know that? What is the opposite problem? Angola has too much electricity. Yeah? Not figuratively. I'm not talking figuratively here. Okay, not thinking that I'm talking in figurative. No, literally. Literally, Angola has been on a dam building spree over the last decade. Yeah? And they have too much electricity. Now, the country commissioned, to just give you a little bit of background, the country commissioned more than 3,700 megawatt of new generation capacity between 2015 and 2020 alone. Now, their biggest powerhouse is the Luka Dam. But you know, these are Portuguese things. I probably not pronounce it in the way that it is. And you might say, what are you talking about? So it's Luka or Lucia, I don't know. Luka Dam on the Kwanza River. Okay? So that single dam produced 2,070 megawatts. I mean, to put that in perspective, that is three times Namibia's entire installed capacity from one dam. Just from one dam. And it get better. Or maybe worse, depending how you look at it. It could be worse for Angola, but yeah, depending how you look at it. Angola has another massive dam under construction called Kakulo, Kabasha, or Kabaka, or Kabasa. As I said, this is a Portuguese thing. So you don't never know where to put Sha or Ka or something. So you know, Kakulo, Kabasha. Which will add another 2,172 megawatt when it is completed. Now, expert estimate that Angola currently has a surplus of around 2,000 megawatt. Currently, a surplus more than what, you see, you know, more than what we produce, a surplus of 2,000 megawatt. And that surplus could actually grow to 4,000 megawatt by 2070. That is enough to power several Namibians. Now, but here's also a painful irony. You know, it's funny. Now, we're talking about that Angola has that much of electricity. The painful irony is this: despite all this electricity, only about half of Angolan owned population, half of own Angolan population have access to power, have access to electricity. Just 51%. So the other thing is that their country loses more than half of its generated electricity to transmission and distribution problem. Okay? When it comes to transmission and distribution, they have problems. Old wires, broken transformers, neglected infrastructures. Welcome to Africa. You know, it is like, it's like having a, how would I put this? A full tank of petrol, but leaky for a line. You know, the power is there, but it cannot reach the people who need it. Yeah? It is there, but it can't reach the people who need it. So they have their own issue. Yeah? We have no power. We have the infrastructure. They have power. They have no infrastructure. So, and the other thing, because of there is no infrastructure, Angola cannot sell its surplus to neighbors like Namibia because there is no physical connection. Now, there is no wire. No cable, no transmission line linking Angola's grid to Namibia's grid, like South Africa. Okay? So the electricity, the Angolan electricity is trapped. It's actually trapped. You know? So, and imagine, I thought of this now in a way that is more dramatic. Imagine having a warehouse full of bread next to a hungry village. No? So, but there's no road between them. You can't, you know, transport this. Eh? Now, that's Angola energy situation in a nutshell. Eh? So it's a warehouse full of bread and next to a hungry village. And there's no road actually to, you know, to take this bread to people who are hungry. So the ANA project, then the ANA project that we talk about, now is that road. Okay. The ANA project is now that road. It's the infrastructure that will finally allow Angola to sell its access power to Namibia and for Namibia to buy it. That's the road now. ANA project is that road. Okay? So, and when we, on the paper, you know, nowadays I like to say on the paper. Why? Because much of these agreements are just on document, you know, on the document. It's a win-win, you know? But we still have to see that in practice. So on a paper, it's a win-win. Well, Angola gets a customer for its surplus, which is Namibia, and Namibia get a new, closer, it's even closer source of power. We get a closer source of power from Angola. So it's a win-win. That's a win-win situation. But as we know this, part of the world, and we have come to learn about that. As we know in this part of the world, what looks good on paper does not always survive the contact with reality. So we know that. You know that. We have experienced that. And that is where the hard question begins. Now, that is where now our hard question begins. Okay? So because I want us to get now into the specific, you know, remember here, we are not celebration clappers, you know, clapping. We are not the, oh, yellow, thank you, why, yellow, why, watate, wameme. You know, what is exactly on the table? That's what we're asking. You know, here we are not celebration clappers. Okay, let's get into specific and, you know, challenge that as well. Well, we have NamPower and the Angola's National Electricity Transmission Company, known by the Portuguese name RNTEP. I wouldn't go into that because otherwise, you know, the Angolan will say, who are you insulting? You know, I don't want to insult people. I have a caller who normally helped me understand a bit of that, but he's not doing a good job, you know. Or maybe I'm not a good student anyway, so could be the other way around. Yeah, these two have signed two agreement. They have signed two agreement, okay? So the first is a joint development agreement. So this is a framework that says both countries will work together to plan, finance, and build the interconnector. Okay? That's the first one. Then the second one is a power purchase agreement. Okay, this is now the commercial contract that set how much power Namibia will buy from Angola, at what price, and under what terms. So that's now the second agreement that was agreed between NamPower and RNTEP. Okay. Now, the physical structure breaks down like this, okay? Just a quick breakthrough. So the 400 kilovolt transmission line stretching now 166 kilometer into total. And for Namibia, only 30 kilometer of that is on Namibian soil, okay? The rest actually is in Angolan, it's in Angola. So, and that's running from the Kunene substation now to the border, okay? From Kunene substation to the border. Now, the remaining 136 kilometers sit in Angola, connecting the border to the Kahama substation. Okay? At Kunene, Namibia will build what is called a transformation station. Yeah, a transformation station. Okay. A transformation. It's like a converter. Now, it's like a converter. A converter because Angola grid runs at 400 kilovolts. 400 kilovolts. The Angola run on that. But the Namibia runs at 330 kilovolts. So the transformation equipment step the voltage down to match our system. So that's why it's like a converter. That transmission, it's a converter. Okay? So, and there's also something called static VAR compensator. Now, the VAR, we're not talking about the video assistant referee that we see on football. You know, this is static VAR compensator. Which is essentially a device that stabilizes the power flow and prevent voltage actually fluctuation. So that's also something that's there. So on top of that, then a separate 270 kilometer transmission line will be built between now. This is inside Namibia, Omatando and Otjikoto substation inside Namibia. So this is the domestic backbone that will now carry the imported Angolan power from the northern border deeper into the country, connecting it to Namibia national grid. So I'm going to the extent, you know, giving you all this detail, Rihanna. You understand? Okay? So now you get a very good picture of what NamPower is trying to do, or and the other company as well. So the total new infrastructure is well over 400 kilometer of a higher voltage line. Over 400 kilometer over a higher voltage line, plus substation and transformation equipment. So, and now the total estimate cost is 941 million, or about 52 US dollar million. And from our side, the cabinet approved the project in February this year as a strategic infrastructure investment. So, and the money for Namibia's share will come from the National Energy Fund, known as NEF. NEF. It's known as NEF. Okay, it's coming from there. NEF is for you. Just to understand that NEF is a government fund specifically. You know, that fund is actually specifically set up to support energy infrastructure. So that the energy infrastructure that actually improve access and affordability. And it hasn't been done, it hasn't been doing well, because access and affordability of electricity in Namibia hasn't been easy. So your tax money, your taxpayer money, indirectly is funding actually this project. Is funding this project. It's your project, okay? It's your money in the end, all right? So NamPower's leadership has actually described this as more than just two agreement on paper. They call it an enduring partnership, you know, on a shared commitment to regional integration. Energy security and sustainable economic development. I love what they say, you know, So they sound so good, and they look up maybe this, what, you know, strong words. But what do they actually mean with all this? What do they actually mean? So that's now what we're going to dig into. We're going to dig into that. What do actually they mean, you know? So we're going to look at some hard questions, you know, that need some answers. Okay. So, but if you want to come through as well, now you have a background. You have a little bit of a background. What is this all about? You know, you're most welcome. You're most welcome now to add your thought and your contribution if you know about this about this project as well. What does it mean? Would this actually bring, you know, would this actually reduce the bill, your energy bill in your pocket? Would that do that? So, yeah, you're most welcome now to come through as well. So 08333 66091. And I'm going to look at some questions of my own, you know, just to help you understand, other factors that, you know, as I said, yeah. So sometimes, you know, this is what happened. And it's something that I'm saying, and especially this is for us media in Namibia. Sometimes what we do, and that goes for not only speaking about other newspaper and things, talking specifically, we have more reporters than actually journalists. You know, because when you put your pen on paper, I was an editor, editor for, would I call it a newspaper? You know, the Catholic Church used to have, Omkuni, if you remember, the Lutheran, they have Omkwetu. They used to have Omkuni and the English Africans, newspaper also called, the Angelus. So I was an editor for that. So what I'm trying to say here is that the disappointing thing sometimes when you read article and things like that, it's more like a reporter, you know, you just present what has been given to you. And sometimes people don't go and look for other information now to, you know, looking is this possible? How this would happen? You're just presenting what a person actually, you kind of like a peace mouth for that organization or for that person, whatever they say, rather than actually interrogating that, looking at other information that what that person say might, how realistic that is, given that the government doesn't have money or whatever, you know, looking at when you put that on the paper, then that's are the things that you're looking at. Much of the things that we're looking at here on Unpacking the Day. So now my question number one is actually 941 million. Is that the real cost? And we will look at that. Now, roughly 315,000 US dollar per kilometer. At roughly 315,000 per kilometer, the ANA interconnector looks cheaper. So than actually similar projects elsewhere in Africa when you compare that. So a comparable line in Mozambique cost over $1 million US dollar per kilometer. You see, it looks very cheaper, okay, in comparing to that. So, but here's the catch, okay? Now, here's the catch. The 941 million figure likely covers only the bilateral connector line itself, you see? The bilateral connector that we're talking about, that the agreement that, plus the transformation equipment at Kunene. Okay? That's all what it would. Now, it almost certainly does not include the 270 kilometer of a Matando to Ochikoto domestic line. It doesn't. It probably doesn't include land acquisition. You have to talk about that, you know. Remember when other things are done, you have to do land acquisition, environmental impact assessment, community compensation in the Kunene region, you know, or the cost of upgrading the Kunene substation to handle now the additional load. So when you add all of that, when you add all of that up, the real price tag could be significantly higher. So we need NAMPOWER to come clean on the full life cycles, you know, the life cycle cost. Not just the headline number, okay? The whole full life cycle cost. So that's one thing when you look at this more deeply. Now, my question number two, is 2029 realistic? It's 2029 realistic. Now, it's because what we look at, Now, this is coming from experience, not my own experience, but what we have seen. The major infrastructure project in this region, we know, have a terrible track record of delays. The Binance Hydropower, you remember that? The Binance Hydropower project on the Kunene River has been discussed for decades and is still not built. Do you remember that? You probably have forgotten about that already. The Kudu Gas, let the popular one, the Kudu Gas Power Project off the Namibian coast was supposed to be operational years ago. This was supposed to be operational years ago. It never happened. It never happened. That's why I said, when it's come to major infrastructure project, at this part of the world, it has really a terrible track record of delays. And this is not only Namibia. Angola's own the Kukalo Kabasa that I'm talking about, the Kukalo Kabasa or Kabaka, dam, is years behind its original schedules. Years behind it. The ANA project faces its own set of risk. It's going to face its own set of risk. So the Kunene region is one of the most remote and environmental sensitive area in Namibia. So think of getting an environmental clearance, consulting with local communities, including now over Himba and over Themba people, and building infrastructure across wrecked terrain. That wrecked terrain, I think, will take time. I'm not an expert, but I can imagine this, looking at what would it take actually to get this happen. So these are the issues. You have also to think of cross-border, coordination between two countries with different regulatory system. That's also another layer of complexity. I don't know whether other people see that, So a realistic completion date, and this is coming from non-educated in terms of this, realistic, be more like 2030, 2031, And Nampawa need to be honest about the timeline risk. As I said, there are examples that we can look at, that we can, point at. So you are welcome. You are welcome to come through and also, add your take. What do you think about ANA project? Would this solve actually Namibia energy issue? Would that actually solve our energy security? So yeah, that's what we're talking about, the ANA project. All right. The other question I have is, what about the people now of Kunene? Here is also something you will never find this in your official press releases. The Kunene region is the home to some of Namibian most marginalized communities. The Oba Himba and Oba Themba people have lived in this area for centuries. They are pastoralists. How do you call the people that pasture? Pastoralist. I think that's the right word. They are pastoralists. So their livelihood depend on the land. So when we talk about higher voltage transmission lines, this doesn't just appear out of a thin air. They don't just appear out of a thin air. They require access road. You need to add access road, construction camps, cleared corridors and substation that take up space. Has Nampawa then engaged? So you have to ask, have they engaged meaningful with these communities? Have they been consulted about the route? Will they benefit from the project? Perhaps through, the thing is passing by. Maybe what they should benefit from electrification of their own villages. Or will they simply see power lines, matching across their ancestral land while their own homes remain dark? Yeah, possible. We can talk of other places that are close to mines that they still actually, you know, they don't benefit from those. So I think this is a question of justice, you know, a question of justice, not just engineering. You know, I'm becoming now the activist for the people of Kunene. All right. So those are things that we have seen this with other projects in other regions, how this become a problem when you don't do that. And we seem to do that over and over. Eh? Over and over. Disregard the community and then in the end, you know, become a problem. We seem to do that over and over again. So, yeah, and the other question I have, will this actually bring down electricity price? And this is actually a question that matters most to you. I think this is the question that most matters to you as listeners, you know? Yeah, and this is the question that matters to me. Will this actually bring down electricity price? So the promise is that the buying cheaper power from Angola will reduce Namibia's reliance on expensive, the one we talk about, US dollar denominator import from Zambia and Southern Africa power pool. Okay? So, and there's some logic into that. Okay? There's logic in this, into that actually. So, Angola's domestic generation costs is among the lowest in the region. It's really among the lowest in the region. I checked it up. It's actually among the lowest in the region. And thanks to its massive hydro dams, you know, then they have this surplus that they don't know what to do with it. So, but the price Namibia pay will not just reflect Angola's generation cost. So it will also reflect, you know, the cost of building and maintaining the interconnector. Those will be included. When you're looking at the Norred, Senored, and all that, those are the things that they do. The cost of transformation, transmission losses, you know, and the Angola's own need to recover its infrastructure investment. So the cost, you know, maybe we may hope it's going to cheap in the way, but when you put all these costs together, so we might find ourselves saying, but we thought, we said this is going to be cheaper and all that. And all right. So we just factor those kind of things in. You know, if you do your research better, you probably understand the situation far, far, far more better. So, and we have this, the power purchase agreement has not been, you know, it hasn't been made public. They just talked that they have this agreement, but it hasn't been made public. We don't know the price per kilowatt per hour. We don't know how much that will cost. We don't know how the pricing will adjust over time, because that normally adjusts over time. We don't know how, we don't know whether it will be a fixed in Namibian dollar or pegged to the US dollar. You never know. All right? So until we see those details, the claim that ANA will lower prices is just a promise, not a guarantee. We need to see that. Okay? And we need to see that. Okay? So for us now to say yes and celebrate, before we celebrate and before we clap hands, let's see whether this realistically going to be a cheaper, as they say. But we need to see the detail. We need to see the number. Give me the number. Okay? This is what we demand here. Give me the number. Okay? So, yeah. The other thing is also what happened if, because there is something here, okay? What happened if Eskom recovers? Now, here's a scenario, okay? And nobody's talking about it. Eskom has been making a comeback. I mean, South Africa's load shedding crisis has eased significantly. You don't hear that anymore over the past year. And new capacity is coming online. So if you follow Eskom, if Eskom stabilizes, now think, if Eskom stabilizes, South Africa could actually once again become a cheaper and reliable source of power for Namibia. Now, South Africa, we have already a connection. Okay? Let's get to the caller. Very good morning to you. Welcome to Unpacking Today.
Yes, Big Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, and yourself, man?
I'm all right, my brother.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a Big Mike. Yeah, so yeah, I was listening to Minister of Mine.
Yeah.
One of the platform today.
Yeah.
Actually, clarified that, you know, maybe it was a misspelling of the numbers.
Yeah.
Error. Mm. It's about $4 billion Namibian dollars.
Okay.
The project. Yeah, the whole project.
Okay. Yeah, do you see?
Yeah. Which is making also sense, because 900, no, it's too less.
That's what I was wondering. That's not possible, you know.
No, it cannot be.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah, no, that may, $4 billion, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look, he talk about a lot of things, mm-hmm. and for me, this is a good investment.
Yeah.
It's what Namibian, all of us have been waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
We're just meeting now. Why South Africa, they keep our right on, is it mean we are spending a lot to buy from Eskom. Because Eskom has been up and down.
Yeah.
This is low setting. But now you can see that when you are saying it's that they are coming back, it's true.
They are coming back.
Mm. They do recover.
And, well. And the issue is here, when you think about it, is that we have already a connection. We have already a connection. Their grid is already connected to our grid.
So there
is nothing that we need in terms of infrastructure that already sorted out. Compare now to the infrastructure that we have to establish between Angola. We have to spend in Angola. So now you have to look at, you know, when you look into the future now, you may say, well, you may have actually have this agreement, and then you started to see that actually Eskom is much cheaper than what you have agreed. You understand?
In Angola.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for me, I'll go with Anna.
Yeah.
Why I'm saying so is because Anna is kind of like a agreement between Namibia, just like Namibia when they are trying to establish another way to go to Botswana.
Yeah.
Between Namibia and Angola, it's a partnership. It's not kind of like the way we are getting from Eskom.
Yeah.
And Eskom is the main, sometimes they say, no, you guys, we are also learning out of it. We might, instead of giving you 50%, I will give you
30%. Yeah. Yeah.
So then we have to go around to Zambia.
Yeah. That's the vulnerability that we talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Then we have to go to Zambia. Sometimes we end up even going to Zimbabwe. You see?
Yeah.
But for my take, the sake of my take is that NAMPOWER, what have they been doing for Southern independence?
There's also an angle that you can look at.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at this, you can also look at the angle that now, as we're running around, now still looking where we can get cheaper energy outside of our country. Is that wouldn't that be a little bit of a risk on our side that we may now, this ANA, we think that is cheaper, and that actually stop us from actually doing anything, from actually producing, generating our own?
That is my take also.
Exactly.
But once we are going for ANA, there must be a project in Dana
exactly.
which we are doing with our business. But the problem with me, is that NAMPOWER become one of like you know the middlemen always we have in the Ministry of Health. That is NAMPOWER for you.
Mm.
When it comes to Ministry of Mine, NAMPOWER is running around. It's a middleman who's going to check where he's going buy the cheap medicine.
Yeah.
And it's what they are doing with our electricity.
Exactly. It's the same thing,
my friend.
Yeah.
It's a middleman now. NAMPOWER is no more like a. That's a way for government, which can create a job, which can also expanding our electricity. No, NAMPOWER is there to distribute, to adapt, I mean, founding out from the what, it's kind of like a distributed, it's not a normal energy generation.
Yeah.
Generator.
Yeah.
Which is really, I think, for us, we have to think, why NAMPOWER is doing this to the country. That's why we are having even this, Snow Red and what? The other one, Red.
Yeah.
They have to charge us so high because NAMPA was also charging them higher.
Mm.
Because they are getting a result outside of Namibia.
Yeah.
But NAMPA, what is supposed to do? We're supposed to be already to have wind power.
Yeah.
The desert.
Yeah, those are the things. Those are the things I'm saying. I was even talking about renewable energies and we're not investing in that. We said we have a potential becoming this and that.
But we're
just talking about that potential. We have a potential becoming the exporter of energy or whatever. But then we're not doing anything. What we're doing, which is also still good.
Something very important also when you are talking about even Kudu gas.
Yeah.
How far we've been talking about Kudu gas.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, even a person who was born at that age,
yeah,
now is a man or having a kid, or is a lady who is married already.
Yeah.
But we're just talking about Kudu gas. But nothing happening.
You don't hear it anymore. You don't hear it anymore.
I can't remember.
Mm.
The problem with us is that we sometimes have all the good plan, but sometimes I wonder who really blocking Namibia to progress.
Yeah. This is about $4 billion. So then once you mentioned that already to me, I'm asking, okay, where are we gonna get that million? Okay.
Where are we gonna get that billion?
You know, and that's why I'm talking about even time frame. If you're talking about 2029, that where are we going to get that much money to be able to do that within that period with that framework? There are money from Development Bank that are specifically for those, but we have taken some money already for sanitation and other things.
For something, you see, that's for me, Neil.
Yeah.
That's why we are saying we are not growing because our economy is not picking up because of those issues. Just imagine now, we are talking about electricity, and the electricity is the one energy everybody needs.
Exactly.
If
the business considered to go, the reason why sometimes, you know, a business doesn't go to, let's say, for example, or Kahao or whatever, it's because of electricity.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
So, talk about even the factory, people who want to come and set up their factory in Namibia.
Yeah.
First of all, they have to think about energy.
Energy.
Water.
Yeah. Energy and water. And energy is expensive, extremely expensive.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
And now that's the same plan that we are giving to China, 70%.
Yeah.
yesterday I said
some of the things that we do is like, otike koshitai walondako, toi koshitai shopu mbanda. Mana tushitame gari kushiteta.
Tushitame.
Ulipo mbada. Tushitame kushitayo kuwa londoku alistoteti. You know?
which is true, because I'm telling you, things which we do in the country is very questionable. Shashi, taleke kuchapime, we are running. Okay, it's what I'm saying. Anna is for me. It's a good instead of going to
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. At this point, sometimes it's how it sounds, you know. Sometimes how it sounds, it's actually good. You're thinking, okay, this is a good agreement, this is a good project. You know, the way sometimes, because when sometimes people, government or these companies, they are marketing it, you know, they are selling it to you as a product. You know, and that's why we need to go into it like what we do here to see,
details.
You know, let's look for information for ourselves, not just what you're giving us. Let's look at what are the situations, later when you go through this and go deeper, you realize, there are issues. There are issues.
Lot of questions, man.
There are a lot of questions. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why for me, I'm thinking of it's a good one. Let us go for it.
Yeah, where we are, it's a good one. You know, where we are at this point in time. Yeah.
And in the meantime, when we are busy with Anna, there must be something in the ground going on in Namibia. You see, we are even having a lot of question mark now when it comes to Russian, trying to talk to Namibian government, and the Namibian government up to now they never respond.
Yeah.
About the nuclear power plant. They never respond up to now. They are quiet. But this information, some of us, we heard.
You see now, you are even bringing up something else now. Now you can ask, are we focusing on nuclear power plant? Or now, because then you can see that we have to abandon that. Because you cannot be able to pursue nuclear plant and again spend 4 billion and the nuclear plant would require how many billion? Probably 10.
How many billions,
You know, 10 well, or 20 million. I mean, 20 billion we're talking about. So, someone realistic, you can already tell,
there's a red flag here.
The government pursue a nuclear plant, but now you have Nampower, who is actually found an opportunity. He said, well, this is an opportunity. So that means you probably abandon that, you know, because you can't have the two. You can, but we know our situation.
We know our physical
environment where we are in. It's impossible.
But you know, for me, once you are in ANA, we can also negotiate about the nuclear power plant. Because the moment, we don't need to give up. And the minister, I think, also he make it reality on that. He talk about it like, no, we are always reviewing where we are, how far away with nuclear. Because up to now, we never, come on, they never approach anybody. But in Russian, they are the one who suggest even to do it for Namibia. But I don't know now why the ministry come in the end and saying no. Then up to now, they are only understudy because the United Nations and what others.
Yeah,
and,
but the other question, Mandume, is that, you know, how long, if you start now, this is the whole production we're talking about, it's going to be the date, completion, it's going about 2029. Now, how long would actually, if you want to decide to do a nuclear plant, how long that will take you? Probably take you the same. It probably take you the same years.
Same years again.
So, it probably same years.
And for me, you know, in between two, if you have to choose, I'll go for nuclear because we have uranium here.
Because it's your own. It's going to be
our own.
You're generating your own.
You'll be able
energy.
to supply the whole subject, my friend.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Now, you are the one who's supplying, not actually being supplied. You are the one who's exporting, okay?
Yeah. Because country can have you can have a good agreement, but it depends on the government who's coming to take over.
Exactly.
Sometimes you might have ANA. And the next president who's coming in, he said, no, this is nonsense for me.
For example.
DRC
Congo become better, and then they said, we need the electricity from Angola, you know. And then now the distribution becomes more for Angola, you understand?
More for Angola,
Then and then the world, they have to start to think, we can't give you that much anymore.
It's for us, our people, or Namibia.
No, and that's it.
They have to choose.
And you also cannot actually plan. The other thing is that you cannot plan a nuclear plant after you have built certain infrastructure. Why would you want to spend so much money on the infrastructure and then later on, you know, become absolutely obsolete? You understand?
But serious, I think for us, we need to really, I'm telling you, we need to do things the right way.
Yeah.
I think for us, we need to invest in nuclear power. That is our own thing, which we are able to generate a lot of electricity. And even the way we are saying it, even we are not set up, I don't think it will be cheaper.
It will not be cheaper
because they wanted to recover their money.
Yeah, of course.
Would they spend in the material that they use and so on?
There are a lot of things, man. Definitely.
Anyway, Mike, let me give you another question. Maybe somebody will come through.
All right. Thanks for coming through. Okay, and thank you for that information. Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right. 08-333-66-09-01. Okay, we're talking about ANA, a project. So between this agreement between our utilities companies, Namibia Manpower and the Angolan counterpart. All right. So, yeah, let's digest and dissect all these issues. So I was talking about the, you know, just, you know, you ask questions when you think, you know, are you looking at different, as I said, we dissect this, looking at different aspects as well. So, and I was saying, look, Eskom, I was talking about Eskom that is actually making a comeback. You know, South Africa, if we talk about load shedding crisis, it has really ceased significantly over past year now. So they're talking about new capacity, and new capacity is coming online. Now, what I'm saying is that if Eskom stabilizes, you know, South Africa could once again become, you know, a cheaper and reliable source of power for Namibia. And in that scenario, Namibia could find itself committed to buying power from Angola through a long-term contract, you know, while cheaper option exists south. You understand? So the ANA project is a bet on the future. So this is a bet on the future, but is it a bet on the right future? I'm just asking. The other thing is also, it doesn't mean that Eskom would probably come right eventually. So it's a scenario that you think. So NAMPOWER needs to explain how the Angola deal fit into a broader, because they need to explain how does it actually fit into a broader energy strategy. Not just bilateral fallback plan. So it's kind of like this is a fallback plan rather than actually a broader energy strategy. Is nuclear plant part of a broader energy strategy? What is in our broader energy strategy? Eh? Do you know? We don't know. And this, it becomes like, well, there's an opportunity here. You know, a fallback kind of plan. Has it been part of our energy strategy? Eh? Given about things that we're talking about, renewable energies, you know, eh? Nuclear energy, we have, you know, nuclear power energy that we're talking about, nuclear power, you know. So, we are all over. And we are all over because we operate in silos. You know, the government is trying to do something. Now you have NAMPOWER here trying. I'm not saying that this is not something that the government agrees, but you can see, you know, it's kind of like, hey, this is an opportunity for us. For NAMPOWER, this is an opportunity. You know, let's get a cheaper electricity. Let's put up, you know. But what about, is that actually part of the broader energy strategy? Where is the strategy? And are we following the strategy? We look like we're all over. All right? And this is what I'm talking about, bigger picture, you know, the bigger picture. So, and we have to understand, this is not happening in the vacuum. It sits within a much larger story about energy in Southern Africa as well. Okay, with this ANA, the Southern African pool, power pool, the SAPP. So, it's the most advanced on the continent, it's the most advanced energy trading market on the African continent, you know, the SAPP. So 12 countries are members. 12 countries are member. The idea is simple, but also powerful, really. So when you think about it, because countries that have surplus power can sell it to countries that need it. Now, this is now done through the coordinated grid, you know? So it's more like a highway system of electricity. You know, it's like a highway system of electricity. Right now, the problem is that Namibia is an active member of SAPP, but our ability to participate fully is limited by our geographic position. So we are at the southwest edge of the grid. Most of the power flows through the South Africa. You know? So the ANA interconnector would give Namibia a direct north link, a second highway into the regional energy market. So that is a strategic, that's strategically valuable for Namibia, really strategically valuable for Namibia. Namibia would, it means Namibia would not be entirely dependent on the southern route through Eskom for its regional, you know, energy imports. You know, anything happen, we still have another route. Okay? So, and there's also a renewable energy angle that we talk about, renewable energy angle. And honestly, yeah, as we said, is Namibia is quietly building one of the most impressive solar and wind energy programs in Africa. Okay? Independent power producers have added nearly 400 megawatt of renewable capacity, you know, in recent years. Okay? And the target is to reach 80% local supply by 2028. Now, and those are the questions that, you know, when we go this way, what about that way? Okay? Are we not, could we then more maybe spend more money, you know, improving our facility, improving our infrastructure, improving our, you know, so that we produce our own electricity. The vulnerability that we talk about, we're still going to be vulnerable. Yes, it's going to be cheaper, but it's still another country that is actually exporting it to us, you know. So we have other, you know, the renewable energy that we're talking about, and we have power producers that are doing really well, you know. They contributed nearly 400 megawatt already, you know, of renewable capacity. So why don't we maximize that? Why don't we, you know, improve that? Because this is within our energy strategy, I believe. We have been talking about that, you know. Green hydrogen. So, you know. Yeah, the ANA interconnector complement this by providing a backup when the sun is not shining and when the wind is not blowing. But it's hardly that happen in Namibia, you know. So it's a part of the, I think the ANA is a part of a diversified energy mix, you know, and that is exactly what I believe, you know, you can say a smart energy strategy looks like. This is where we are at this point in time. Yeah, there are nuances, of course, that often get lost in the celebration, as some of them that we highlight in our discussion now. You know, every megawatt Namibia buys from Angola, it doesn't matter. It's a megawatt we are not generating ourselves. You know, it's a megawatt that we are not generating ourselves. So if we become too comfortable importing cheaper power from our neighbors, we might lose that agency that we're talking about, the agency now to invest in our own generation capacity. Yeah? And that's what we have been with South Africa. That's why we solely rely on that, because, you know, we become comfortable, yeah? Just importing cheaper. That's going to become a comfort for us. And then what on the detriment of losing the agency, you know, actually to invest in our own generation capacity. So energy independence is not just about where the electron come from, you know. It's about having an infrastructure. It's about having infrastructure like other countries does. It's about having the skills. Well, one of that is a political will, you know, to control your own energy destiny. And in this case, yes, it's a solution to our energy in some way. We still have to see that. But it's not in our own, it's not in our control. Okay? The energy, it's not in our own destiny. So the ANA deal should be a stepping stone, not a crunch. All right, it should be a stepping stone, like not really a crunch. You know, as actually, what is it? As Mandume just said that it should be a stepping stone. Yeah. All right. Let's have a quick commercial. When we come back, maybe we get to our guest this morning. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a second.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafa sana na longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ompitombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayaguro mirandito mwa yoe yongeshifa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tu imemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashifareki uimepo.
Imba ya rile ombwa na hii etetaweza kwa
Arapungi kile ombeo mbi hukusha Njiviro yoye ilile ombupu o hatane na wina Ikare na mafa kumurungi wa indu Walile ongere kusha umune ondengu ukura kwa imba Una oviune vya peke Kwa wondola amigongo vitati na hambu umwe Mumwe So pika ovingi mkukara norupa Ondando ya peke yukia nja oshimariva Ola peresente dano kumyeze vitati moshimariva Ola peresente umurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva Ola peresente umirongo ivari na dano Kwa miedhi ya mulongwa na vivari moshimarifu. Itooro rela ondengu, zima yu mbura na wakove na wina onyangu kife. Ashiesho imba ya kute oshimariva shishihina omarifiro. Imba o maoronga neno uwiru haka enina. Itako na wina rishangita jinon.
All right, very good morning to you and welcome back to Unpacking the Day, the show where we sit down with everyday Namibians doing extraordinary things. Last Friday, Wintu played a host to the second annual MTC Branding and Marketing in Daba at the Country Club Hotel. It was an event of glamour, inspiration, and celebration of excellence in the marketing, branding, and communication industry in Namibia. So among the award handed out that night, one in particular stood out and had the entire room off its feet. You know, the MTC Marketing and Branding in Daba Lifetime Achievement Award. And the woman who took home that honor this year is none other than Hilda Basson Namjebo, the founder and the managing director of Oxygen.na. Good morning, Hilda, and welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
It's an absolute honor to have you here. So, now, let us start right at the magical moment at the Country Club Hotel. So, when your name was called for the Lifetime Achievement Award, what was the very first thought that ran through your mind?
Absolute gratitude.
Yeah.
that was it. It was consistently, you know, it was the consistent feeling I had. I was truly grateful for the opportunity, for the privilege. It's a privilege to be, you know, given an award such as that. So I was really, really grateful.
Yeah. But you have been in this industry for a long time. Did you ever imagine all those years ago that a moment like this would come your way?
Not really. Mm. I must be honest. I'm not a person who, I don't do things for awards or for recognition.
Yeah.
You know, I just simply do it because I get so much joy
yeah.
and satisfaction and fulfillment from it. I also love being available to other people to be, you know, to serve other people. I also love serving the country.
Yeah.
So everything I do is in service of people and country. And so that's where my satisfaction and joy comes from. These kinds of awards are great, but they're really just a cherry on top of the cake.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And for those listening who may not fully understand the weight of this particular award, what does the MTC Marketing and Branding Indaba Lifetime Award actually represent in our Namibian context?
So it was the first one that they have awarded. It was the first MTC Branding and Marketing Indaba
yeah.
Awards. And I think they're trying to fill the vacuum. And because I've been in the industry for such a long time, I remember back in the day we had the Advertising Awards of Namibia.
Yeah, yeah.
At that time, I was with Ogilvy, and Ogilvy during that time raked in a few awards, along with a number of other advertising agencies. Since then, obviously, I've gone on to do more comprehensive communications, no longer so singularly focused on advertising.
Mm.
And I think that institution also died out. I think it was called the AAN, Advertising Association of Namibia. And we've never as an industry really been able to get that institution together, to get it operational and And I think MTC is trying, and I think they made the statement as well that it's time for us to get that organization back on its feet so that we can, you know, have a voice. What institutions like that make available to you is it gives you a share of voice
yeah.
in the rooms where decisions are made. And because engineers are organized and united, architects are organized and united, teachers even are unionized. But really people in the marketing, public relations spaces, communication spaces, we're not organized. The yeah. journalists have the Editors Forum of Namibia and then another organization as well. So it's very important if you really want to be taken seriously to have a organization that government, for example, can speak to.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's so many different people that stakeholders have to engage.
Mm.
And it just makes it easier if we one organization. So I think that's the background that I just quickly wanted to highlight that MTC wanted to fill,
yeah.
you know, to complement. And they made the announcement that they will finance it should people get themselves organized together to reinstitute that organization again for Namibia.
Yeah.
So I think it's what MTC is doing is really laudable.
Yeah.
Marketing people need to get together. And I think that's more than anything else is what this Indaba gets done.
Mm-hmm.
It gets marketing people in the same room. It gets advertising people in the same room.
Yeah.
It gets us exposed to new themes such as AI. And you know that it has a humongous impact on our sector.
Very much.
But it also
yeah.
exposes you to international speakers. So we had, for example, the president of the Institute of Marketers from Malawi, Zambia, Kenya. They all spoke. And it helps you to benchmark.
Yeah.
You know, are we competitive, even as a marketing sector in the country?
Yeah.
How competitive are we when we compare ourselves to marketing, to marketers in Zambia, to marketers in Kenya, to marketers in Malawi?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are critical to competitiveness because we are supposed to distinguish brands one from the other. Countries, even, you know, when it comes to nation branding, one from the other. And so you're critical in the conversations around commerce. You're critical in conversations around business. You're critical in conversations around inter-Africa trade even, and we are not in those rooms. So it's important we get ourselves organized to get into those rooms.
Exactly, exactly. So let's get back to your journey, you know. Let's take it back to the beginning. What drew you into the world of branding, marketing, and communication in the first place?
I was just always curious. I remain curious.
Mm.
It's probably my most distinguished, you know, attribute. I love to learn. I love to know
yeah.
more. I'm very focused on learning because I believe, you know, in that statement that is, you know, that is becoming quite widely known that the illiterate of the 21st century will be those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn.
Yeah.
So I do not want to be an illiterate person at all at any given time. So I really started with comms because of that, because, it, you know, I love to read. It was a natural thing for me to read. and it's in books that I felt I found the knowledge and information.
Yeah.
And so I got intrigued into this space of, it was first media for me, because I grew up in a home where media was a priority.
Yeah.
Because reading was a priority. So my dad would bring newspapers home, and we would read that. We would be told to read that. I also remember very fondly folding up a newspaper as if it were a microphone, and my mom had a fig tree, and I would stand under that fig tree and address crowds.
Yeah.
Those are my early memories of my childhood. So that's where it started for me. It was always just there, and I think over time God just literally, you know, developed it, ignited it, and it got exposed and more people spoke into it.
Yeah.
And of course, then eventually I really was fortunate to land a temporary job actually at NBC. I done some other things with my life, also in public relations, unskilled, you know, basically just on what you know. But then at NBC, I landed a job as a production assistant, and I really loved it so much that I think I became one of the bright stars at NBC.
Yeah.
At the time I was offered a scholarship with Germany and to go and study television production and engineering.
Yeah.
Off to Germany, studied that, came back. And then I worked for a number of years at NBC, felt challenged, you know, to move on. Got into PR, studied PR, then studied business because I wanted to do business. Had my own business at the time, which was then Ogilvy & Mather for a number of years. I was joint managing director with Annie Maton and eventually took over from her as substantive joint managing director. I was truly the first black indigenous Namibian to own an advertising agency.
Mm-hmm.
And that agency grew really, really well. We had really fantastic clients. And then I decided to take a sabbatical, you know, early days of sabbatical.
Yeah.
And I spent some time with PricewaterhouseCoopers. Also in as head of marketing, but they called it a different title, but the essence is it was head of marketing. I had some exposure even to the South African firm because they thought I was pretty good at what I was doing in Namibia. So they wanted me to take responsibility for Africa marketing for PwC. And then I decided again, you know, it's time for business because I'm really an entrepreneur. And then I started Oxygen.na, and that's been the course for the last 20 years.
It's been 20 years already.
In that time, we founded Team Namibia because we felt Namibia needed a distinctive brand.
Yeah.
We needed to unite about an iconic identity that unifies all of us, that sets the country apart, etc. And yeah, that's been the journey.
Yeah, yeah. There's a saying that success is never a straight line. Looking back, which failure or setback, let's say setback, taught you the most valuable lesson?
You know, they teach me all the time. I think, and because you said it's not a straight line, there is not one defining moment of failure. It's constant because I think as you break through levels, you find new challenges, new opportunities, new failure, but you always have to lead. So I don't think people should think of failure as it's once in my lifetime that I'm going to fail at something.
Yeah.
You're going to fail over and over again because that's enough. It's in failing that you know, that you overcome because failure is lessons. Failure is learning. Failure is not setback. I think we think failure is setback. So it's in that failure or that moment of failure, I learn what I ought to learn.
Yeah.
I apply what I should apply now that I know better, and I scale and leapfrog to the next level. At the next level, I will also be challenged. I will also be exposed to challenges and difficulties. Do I fail? Do I pass? Sometimes I fail. Sometimes I pass.
Yeah.
But again, I will be challenged, and I'll have to face that mountain of failure in front of me. I scale it eventually. I leapfrog over that. I go to the next level, and I need to again face challenges, failures, opportunities. The lesson is constant. It's revolving. Life is revolving. It's not stationary. We never get to a place of arrival where I say, I failed then, I've now arrived, I'm never going to face failure in my life. I faced failure this year.
Yeah.
I face failure all the time. You know, sometimes you pitch for a client, you don't win it. You know, you're not successful. What do you learn from it? How do you overcome that, you know? So it's constant,
how many times you fall, it's actually how many times you get up, you know?
Absolutely, yes. And people must not think of failure as once in your lifetime or as definitive. It happens, You learn what you must, and you scale it. And you over. I did the Fish River Canyon, for example.
Mm.
And one of the worst things in the Fish River Canyon, has so much sand. I remember walking in that thing for 5 days and asking God, why did you have to put so much sand in one place?
Yeah.
It has so much sand. It has huge rocks that you have to climb.
Yeah.
You know, they call it boulders. There's like a whole day where you just climb boulders. And you climb, you crawl, you become undignified. Nobody sees you. It's just you, your mates, and your trainer, hopefully, that's with you. You climb that, you summit it, you go over just to find another boulder waiting for you, and you go and you go. Because if you don't summit them, if you don't go over the boulders, you don't get to the end of your journey. And that's life. Constant boulders, constant challenges.
Exactly. So now, let's come back to the award. What do you think the judges actually saw in your body of work that made them say, this is the person who deserves this recognition?
You know, I listened to what people said after I was awarded.
Yeah.
I always listen to people. I always want to hear what people think. And people said consistently, they said the word consist. I'm very consistent.
Yeah.
And that's true. I think I'm pretty consistent. And another thing people said also, and I don't want to blow my own horn, but I'm humble. So I listen to the cues from what people, because I also asked the same question to myself.
Yeah.
I was not in the room. What did they think? How did my name come up? And I'm sure I wasn't the only name mentioned.
Yeah.
What made me to be the person, you know, what fit for the award? And I know it was consistency, trustworthy, humility. I think it's those attributes that people don't always think are the glamorous ones.
Yeah.
But that's what people see and that's what people want. So for me, that's how I've tried to live my life. I've tried to be that if I told you I'll see you tomorrow, that I commit to seeing you tomorrow. So integrity has been my thing. I don't like to change my word. I don't like to make promises and then not honor them.
Yeah.
And to have seen people say that, you know, consistently, people were almost not even surprised. Some people were basically like, oh, really? Only now? Finally? I had comments like that.
Yeah.
So people felt that way about me, even if I didn't win the award. They felt I made an important, lasting contribution to the sector in Namibia, with or without the award. I am grateful for the award.
Yeah, and that's actually leads to my next question. You are known not just for what you have built, but for the people you have built up, you know. How important has mentorship been in your career, both as a mentor and as someone who was mentored as well, I think, yeah.
Mm. Very important question, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
So Miles Monroe, who I really, you know, I followed his teaching and what he taught me. I had the privilege of knowing him personally.
Yeah,
and
okay.
If Miles would speak to you, he would always tell you, you are not a success without a successor. If you leave and there's a vacuum because you've not trained anybody in to take over your job or your role, you have failed.
Yeah.
I also think of myself as a generational leader.
Mm.
If women, and I was the first cohort of women who came into C-suite leadership after independence.
Yeah.
If women, the next group of women come into leadership, into the C-suite, and they struggle with what I struggled with, then my generation has failed the next cohort of women.
Yeah.
So I think of my life like that. That's why it's very important for me to be intentional about mentoring people. That would be one-on-one mentoring, but I also have an active relationship with the institutions of higher learning in the country.
Yeah.
From NUST, I have 40 interns who I've personally trained for 6 months at a time over these number of years.
Mm.
40, which means I take them into my business for 6 months.
Mm.
I teach them what I know. I train them what I know. I correct them. We review their work, their body of work with their lecturers and their supervisors. we redo a few things where we feel some of the disciplines have to be strengthened. And the same relationship I have with UNAM.
Yeah.
And at UNAM, I have about 10. But those people are now occupying very senior positions in marketing, either middle management or senior positions in marketing in the corporate sector of Namibia. For example, I have people on radio like Trezor Cooper, who's at Radio 99, Davet, who's at the ECN. Selma Mongo at FNB. Rosa Nicanor at NamPower, and the names continue and it continues. And that for me, that's what success means to me.
All right.
That I have impacted the lives of other people, and that also means it. I don't only offer networking, or I don't only offer mentoring.
Yeah.
It also means that when you want to scale, and you want to, you know, you think that you're fit for a promotion, can I coach you so that you can get your head? Because often it's the stuff that's in your head that must help you to leapfrog to that next title. How do you cope now that you're at a senior level? I coach very senior people. I mentor very senior people. How, especially in the people side of business. Because, you know, the problem that we have, even financial people, people will be excellent as a CA doing somebody's books or somebody's audits, handling somebody's audit. But then they become, for example, the head of that department, and they don't know how to manage the people who must now do the audits. They still think they are now the senior auditor.
Yeah.
Leadership is not like that. When you're a journalist and you're no longer the journalist and you become the manager of the station, don't run your journalist as if you are now the senior journalist.
Yeah.
You must run results through those journalists for that entity, so that that entity can fulfill its mission and its vision. But we struggle to make that transition. So where we have a technical skill, we just think we are now senior of that skill, and we don't ever let the people who must learn and grow in those portfolios grow and make mistakes and get better in that job. We still want to micromanage people. We can't micromanage people as leaders, because then you are not a leader, you're just a manager.
Yeah,
so a lot of the stuff I also do is in leadership and management. What is a manager? Management, do the right things. Leadership, do things the right way.
Yeah.
There's different things, there's different approaches in which we must, apply ourselves. So that's how I think, and that's the kind of stuff I hope to leave in the next generation. We will not live forever. We must make sure that we leave a legacy in the next generation.
Yeah. So, talking about the next generation, the industry has changed so much since you first started, from traditional media to the digital age. How have you adapted, and what excites you most about where things are heading now?
I think always in my life, I have a principle. I must always have young people in my life so that I can get energy and difference, and just they confront you with your preconceived ideas.
Yeah.
And I must always have an older person in my life who I can look up to for advice and wisdom, because they are the ones who can tell you where to go, because they've gone ahead of you. So those are two principles. Have a young person who can challenge you.
Yeah.
Have an old person who can guide you. If you have that, then you can play, kind of like in the midfield of life. And you learn from life. Constant. So what works for me is I study constantly. I never stop studying, and studying for me means YouTube videos. It means Coursera.
Yeah.
It means going to a panel discussion tonight. It means going to a public lecture tomorrow.
Yeah.
I never, never stop learning.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid to learn new things, because I know I don't know all things. But I also know that if I can read, I can understand. If I can read, I can grow. And I always tell people that if people can read, they can learn.
Yeah.
Only give them the opportunity to read. Teach them to read so that they can learn for themselves. So if I can learn, if I can read, then I can go to the library in the days when we had libraries, or I can buy a book.
Yeah.
I can go online and I can learn in a specific space that I'm interested in. So knowledge is available to all of us. All we must do is we must have the mindset. And this is really a mindset issue, because people feel after they studied, after they've completed school, after they've now settled into a career and they wait for death to come, they will just maintain.
Yeah.
If you were to measure their heart rate, it would just be flat. It would barely keep them alive. It would just tit, and there would be no excitement. That's not what life is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be a roller coaster of constant growth and going through constant cycles of growth. And people just need to change their mindset about learning. I always watch people when I go to an event. I did it last week when I went to the MTC in Durba as well, marketing in Durba.
Yeah.
I watch who the people are who take out their notebooks and write their notebooks full of information.
Yeah.
Those are the people, for example, I promote. If I watch you and you write when I'm not watching, if you learn when nobody's telling you to learn, I will keep my eye on you. And when somebody says to me, there's somebody I'm looking for, you know, can you make a recommendation? Those are the people who I will make a recommendation about. Because they're curious, they're hungry to learn. I mean, we know Steve Jobs said, stay hungry, stay foolish.
Yeah.
That's my philosophy as well. I stay hungry, I stay foolish.
Yeah. Now, you have worked with some incredible brand and organization over the years. So is there a particular campaign or a project that stand out as your proudest achievement?
Sure, there are many.
I know. Yeah.
But I know that for me, if I can do something for children, I'm always at my happiest.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've done quite a number of projects, but I remember the Coca-Cola Open Happiness.
Mm.
Coca-Cola, many years ago, they transitioned from Enjoy to Coca-Cola Open Happiness.
And
we were entrusted with that campaign to go around the country. And Coca-Cola wanted us to do a sensory test, which meant that if we opened a Coca-Cola or we gave a Coca-Cola to somebody, you had to take them through all of their senses, so that they understood the experience of drinking a Coke. Because Coke is not just a beverage that quenches your thirst.
Yeah.
It is an experience that you have with Coke. So when you open it, you must hear the shh. If you smell it, you must get that feeling of jiggling in your nose and almost make you sneeze.
Yeah.
It must always be very cold and refreshes you. You must touch the bottle and you must feel the shape of that bottle, that it's unique and different.
Yeah.
And I remember I did the Ngwediva Trade Fair as an activation, and I didn't have to do the activations because we had activators. But every now and then I get in the middle of things and I help the activators with their work. And watching, because obviously with Coke, we had to ask the parents first because of the sugar content, may I give your child a Coke?
Yeah.
Then the parent would say yes. And at the Ngwediva Trade Fair, we would take a little child through that experience that I've just explained so they understand that Coke is more than a drink.
Yeah.
And for that child to have their own, often it would be their first own Coke that they had to drink.
Mm.
Because obviously we grow up in homes where we share, if there's something to, a bottle of Coke, we share it. I never have my own bottle of Coke to drink.
Yeah.
I will never forget those eyes when you tell that 5-year-old, you don't have to give the bottle back. The bottle is yours. You can finish this Coke. It is completely yours.
Yeah.
Joys like that, I mean, they change your life forever. And I hope I get to hear the stories about kids.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me one day, you gave me my first Coke. You know, I hear stories of people where I did where I met people randomly and I did stuff where I said something randomly and that it meant a lot for them. So I there's lots of stories to tell, but Coke really is one of those outstanding ones for me.
All right. So what is next for Hilda Basso Namjebo? So what chapter of this incredible journey are you writing right now?
I'm writing. That's good that you use that word. Hilda is writing.
Yeah.
She's writing a lot of books. I'm writing because I believe in the importance of memory. I believe that, and I'm reading as many of the struggle books as I can of the Namibian history as I can at the moment. I'm reading Tate Lau's book. I read Professor Nikondo's book where his mom thought he was a ghost when he returned from exile because she thought he died in exile.
Yeah.
I'm reading Tate Kulu's book where others wave it. I'm rereading that. I'm reading Dr. Libertine's book. There's so many of these books I'm reading at the moment. And the reason why I'm reading them is because I want Namibians to understand and really what it took for us to get to where we are.
Yeah.
I fear that we are that it's easy for us to break Namibia down, to dismiss what is going on in this country, which is a great country, because we do not value the sacrifices which were made to bring us here. So I read, and because I read, and because I know other people don't like to read, I am writing some of those books into simpler English or in a more interesting fashion. I finished a book now on Tatekulu, and I started the first chapter, and it's leadership lessons, and it's leadership lessons for Gen Zs, like between 13 and 15, 16 years old. That's the people, those are the people I'm targeting, because I want them to understand that you are a leader. We are depending on you to take over the leadership of Namibia at some stage, but it's a job that you need to prepare for, and it's a job that you must be prepared to sacrifice for. And Sam Nyoma, when he left, he said to the old man who dropped him, Tate Ludwig Stanley, he said to him when he looked back, I will be back with independence. That was Sam Nyoma's last words when he was taken out of the country through the border post to Botswana. And he came back many years later.
Actually, that gave me some chills already, you know.
Now, I may have told somebody yesterday, oh, I'll see you tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow. And then tomorrow, when I think about it, it becomes literally, it becomes incompetent for me, inconvenient for me to see you or to honor my commitment. How many times do we make commitments to people and we don't honor it? But this gentleman with no education, if you read Where Others Wavered Again, my goodness, what a book. You know, he's just his humanity. If you think about his humanity, there's a scene in the book where he goes to work because he worked at the railway station one morning, 6 o'clock. He was a cleaner at the railway. He went there on his bicycle. I can see that Tekulu going on a bicycle, very neatly, well-dressed. He finds a boy because of the contract labor system who was beaten up by his employer, badly beaten and basically left to die, naked, stripped completely naked. He drives home, gets the guy an oversized shirt because so that nothing can touch the boy's body because the body is so bruised, and he gets that boy to the hospital so that boy can get medical care. The stories are just enormous. Now, these are the people. You can call them incompetent. You can say they didn't do enough. They didn't do everything. Those are the sacrifices we made. They made. We must ask our generation, what are the sacrifices we're going to make for the economic struggle? You know, so that's what I'm writing about. I'm writing about identity. I worry that our kids fall prey to any fashion. If this becomes fashionable, then they go there. They don't seem to know who they are. There's no identity inherent in them that this is who I am. I'm proud to be who I am, despite the fact that I may not have everything. So I'm writing a wide array of books. So hopefully I'm writing a book also on the genocide. And the book is simply entitled, You Know About Auschwitz, But Do You Know About Shark Island? Because many Namibians don't know about Shark Island and what it stands for. But we all know about Auschwitz because we've watched so many German movies and international movies on Auschwitz that we know about that camp where 6 million Jews were killed. But we don't know that in Luderitz there is a camp, an island called the Shark Islands, where people were massacred and hetero women had to go and shave the heads of their own loved ones so that they could export those skeletons, you know, to Germany. We must write about this. And I'm writing so that German young people can also know what happened, what their country did in a country such as Namibia, that the first, you know, genocide of the 20th century was committed in Namibia. They need to know. We're not saying they must take blame for it, but they need to know about this because they know about Auschwitz. They know about the Jews. They need to know about Namibia as well.
Well, I wish I had enough time,
We can talk again.
Definitely. We have to make that time again. So, but before we wrap up now, if you could leave, if you could leave our listeners with one thought or one message, what would that be?
I think just to continue working for Namibia. To continue working, to never give up on our country. This is a great country. It's not perfect. It's true. No country is perfect.
Yeah.
But this one is really special. But if we can all just bring our best gifts to it and build it, you know, instead of breaking it, imagine where it will go. God has not given us the many blessings he's given us in this country because he's just confused or he doesn't know what to do with all of the resources he has.
Yeah.
Namibia is supposed to be a special country in the League of Nations.
Yeah.
We must believe it and rise to that occasion.
Himba, congratulations once again on this well-deserved honor, and thank you for being a trailblazer, you know, a trailblazer, a mentor, a leader, a proud daughter of Namibia, and we are incredibly proud of you, and we look forward to seeing what the next chapter holds. So, thank you for joining us on Unpacking the Day.
I am grateful. Thank you so much.
All right. All right. And that's Hilda Basson, Namjebo. You know, the award winner, the MTC Marketing and Branding Indaba Life Achievement Award winner, just giving us a download on what this actually award mean, and of course her experience in the industry. So, and basically, so we didn't get a time actually for you to come through, and I wish I had actually interview earlier because this is only time she found. No, you didn't get a time to come through, and maybe, you know, add your comments or what your reaction to it. So, but we can do that tomorrow. So yeah, until then, until tomorrow then, I'm handing over now to Tate France in Windhoek. I'm handing over to the Windhoek colleagues to take over. So for me, let's talk again tomorrow. Let's do this tomorrow. So I know there are calls coming through, but we're not going to be able to do that. We're heading over to France. So from me, Moeko Shaveli, see, let's do this tomorrow again. And it's a goodbye. And have a great day ahead. All right. Bye.